Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm sorry. I just literally got off the phone with Jack Hammond, and he said to me at the end, "You realize that your ratings are higher when you're off the air, right?" Adam Amin in just a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Alex Ovechkin reaches a milestone for the Washington Capitals.
And a cast breaking out. It is Backstrom. On now to Ovechkin. In on the right side. Ovechkin's going to call his own number. He scores! The goal! And 1,000 NHL points! Alex Ovechkin does it again!
Sounds like he scored. All right. 1,000 points for him. Caps beat the Pens last night 5-2. Final half hour, Mark Vandermeer, the play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, old friend, and a guy that we also consider to be a friend. That's Adam Amin, joining us from ESPN. Adam, welcome. Thanks so much for carving out a few minutes for us today.
No, anytime. And now, how do the ratings go when I jump on today? I'm assuming they tumble and plummet as soon as I step on, right? I mean, when it's you and me, if ratings high without you, I imagine they're high. And then you and me together, I think they plummet down.
Actually, we've seen a tripling when you're on, and then when it goes back to just being me. I have to tell you a funny story. There's a guy named Lou Prado, Adam, that wrote a book that one, you know, and this is standard. A lot of universities have this 100 things you need to do as a Penn State fan before you die. And in his book, he lists Jack Ham at number 33, which was his Penn State number. Well, then later in the book, at 82, listen to Steve and Jack on the radio. So when he's by himself, he's 33. When he's combined with me, he falls 59 spots.
All the math is in his favor, man. I can't argue with him. He's got the number.
You had one of the great views of the national championship game. Talk about the view and then everything that you saw.
So, I mean, being on the sidelines for that game was incredible. I mean, to have the access that we had on the sideline, I was on the Clemson sideline all night from the start of the game to the end of the game, and just to see how these guys interact with each other, to see the athleticism on display at field level, which is, you know, Steve, you and I we're so privileged to do the job that we do and to be up in the booth for all these big games at big moments. But one thing we lose out on is not only seeing these guys, these athletes up close during the game, but we also miss out on the buzz. I mean, you work in one of the great atmospheres in all of college football, so I'm sure it permeates you a little bit more. But for the general sense, we just don't have it. We don't have that lifeline to the fan that's literally 10 feet away from us, you know, when we're on the sideline. It's nuts. So to kind of feel all of that, especially so close to kickoff, because again, we're not on the field that close to kickoff.
Right.
You know, we're out of the, maybe an hour before or whatever, we're back up in our booth. I mean, to feel that energy from start to finish, to start to feel the Clemson fans swell as they kind of felt like this thing was maybe in their grasp, to hear them go nuts when Mike Williams made two of the great catches I've seen in college football all season, and to be under the crossbar essentially when Deshaun Watson finds Hunter Renfrow to put the game away. I mean, the energy level of that, I can't compare to anything. As much as I love being in the booth, and I'll always take that over anything, to have that type of unique experience was something I won't forget anytime soon.
They ran 99 plays in the game. In the fourth quarter, Yeah, and Alabama does not substitute a lot. In the fourth quarter, as you watched it field level, did you get a sense that Alabama, which didn't have to do a lot of fourth quarter work this year, started to get a little tired?
They hadn't trailed in the fourth quarter all season long. To be in that position for the first time was taxing for them. To face a tempo offense that's as efficient as Clemson is, and mind you, on some big plays by Clemson, they were tight catches, whether it was Williams or Renfro. I believe Jordan Leggett was in on one of them as well. They're trying to rush down the field and get the next playoff, and then all of a sudden there's a whistle blown and there's a review, and the fans were really upset about it, and Deshaun Watson was talking to a referee at one point going, come on, guys, like, you got to get these calls because we're trying to run our offense. We're trying to run tempo. So even with Alabama kind of getting a breather, I think they were taxed more than they ever have been this season. Maybe if you go back to the Ole Miss game earlier in the year when they trailed in the second half. I think the Texas A&M game was the only other game they trailed in the second half, if I'm not mistaken. And other than that, they'd been clean all year. I mean, they had leads at halftime. They've been able to kind of run their offense, even with their kind of new style of running a little bit more no-huddle this year than they had in years past. It's still, I think they were as taxed. That defense was as taxed as I think maybe we've seen. You know, as explosive as Ryan Anderson and Jonathan Allen and Rashawn Evans and some of these guys are, I was not seeing some of that explosiveness when we got late in the fourth quarter.
And it's a really good point, good observation on your part. Deshaun Watson, as you watch at that level, up close, what impression did you get of his physical and mental toughness as he went through this night?
He's the best player in college football. And I know it's easy to say in hindsight, it's easy to kind of deliver that message when he's got a national championship to his credit now. And I saw a lot of Lamar Jackson this year. I saw both of them during the regular season. I saw a lot of Lamar, and I still think Lamar Jackson was the best player on the field more often than not, and I still think he was the most explosive player in college football. But if you were to ask me who the best player in college football is and who it was this season, I think from start to finish, and really over the last couple of years, I mean, you have to give it up for Deshaun Watson. The hits that he took, the punishment that he took, I mean, he got cut in half at one point on a 9-yard run when he went pirouetting into the air. He got hammered by Jonathan Allen in the fourth quarter on one of the late drives and got up and just kind of bent down. You know, the referees had to help him up, and he just kind of shooed him off and said he was okay. I mean, his physical prowess is impressive. His toughness was impressive. And then mentally, to be able to withstand some of the things that he withstood, and keep the poise that he was able to keep and to drive that team down in a two-minute situation and win the game the way he did. I mean, that's legendary status we're talking about. And there's nothing you can tell me that's going to make me question what I think about Deshaun Watson at this point. His skill set, his physical and mental toughness, there's nothing you can tell me that's going to make me question.
He took shots in that game that ordinary people would never get up from and kept getting up and kept trying to make plays. My respect for him, I already had great respect for him to begin with, but my respect for him watching this play out grew exponentially with each possession.
Yeah, I agree, and especially the Allen hit. The Allen hit is what got me. It was the play where he almost got swallowed up back in like the 20.
Right.
I want to say they were at the 32 or 33-yard line of their own territory, and Watson went scrambling back, and he went straight back. He had pressure. He had to slide to his left. Two defenders came in on him. Evans, I think, was one of them, and he looked to be dead to rights. He was able to spin out of that, then got rid of the football for an incompletion to save those 12, 13 yards of field position and took the shot from Allen and to get up after that. I mean, that probably like kind of epitomized his night for me, and he's still – you know, he was able to keep the ball out of harm's way in a crucial moment of the game. I thought it was incredible.
What do you think this game did for the game of college football because of the way it played out and the fact that obviously, you know, you had a marquee team in there in Alabama that didn't win? What do you think this game did for the game?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's good to see Clemson win. I think it's good to see somebody knock off Alabama. I think it's fun to see, I mean this in more of a colloquial sense, the villain go down. You know, like Alabama has become maybe like a Duke or Kentucky of college football, the way we look at Duke or Kentucky in college basketball. I just think it's more fun that way for everybody. I don't know. Clemson's not going to be a national brand, you know, as much as I love them and as much as you probably do because you're a fan of the sport and we're so entrenched in it for 4 months out of the year. You know, for most people out west, they'll watch Alabama, but they're not really going to watch Clemson. You know, they'll watch Ohio State, but they're not really going to go out of their way to watch Clemson. I think this was good for college football, A, to have a rematch, because I think you can draw in more casual fans when you can chew on a storyline like that. And I do think it's good to see Alabama go down. I do think it speaks to the parity, which there is a lot of. I know it's very top-heavy in a lot of conferences, but it's a parity-filled sport. I mean, your guys proved that just about as well as anybody this year. You know, after a couple of losses in non-conference, you have an outstanding Big or a loss in non-conference, you have an outstanding Big Ten season with just one loss, and you go to a great game in the Rose Bowl game, and I think that speaks to the parity of this sport, and I think it speaks to how you can come back in this sport, and I think it speaks well to the playoff system, because and I'm sure some fans in State College would disagree with me, but I still think the playoff system is a good system for the most part. I think that for the most part they get it right. I think it gives us more options. I think it gives us an opportunity to see a lot more teams that we might not take time out to look at. So I think all of this played out in a great way for college football. I think the momentum for this sport is still well intact, and I think it's only going to make it better.
Something that I enjoy is that I do football, then basketball, and I do baseball in the summer as well. And I love the changing of seasons, and I feel in a lot of ways it keeps me fresh. You're making that transition as well. Is that how you've always felt about what you do, Adam, that the changing of seasons keeps you fresh?
Well, I'll tell you this. On Tuesday morning, I got back to my hotel after the Monday night game at about 2 a.m. It was a long game, late game, and I was keyed up because Tuesday morning I was flying from Tampa to Houston to Fayetteville, Arkansas for an SEC game on Tuesday night, and I was on the air later that night. And for me, it's freshness. It signifies that this is the time where we now get to lock in to the basketball side of things, And I'm looking at my schedule and it's packed for January and February and March to go from college to NBA and back, and to have an opportunity to do all these things and to do TV and to do radio, and all of this kind of hits you again and say, hey, it's time to go again, and it doesn't matter whether you're tired or not. It just gives you some kind of sense of this is the reset button. You get to hit it and then you get to go forward. And I think that's probably the thing I love most about my career. And I'm sure, Steve, you feel the same way. It's just to be able to do all the things we get to do is really awesome. And I don't take it for granted. I don't think you would either.
Nope, not in the least. Never one second half taking it for granted. In college basketball, it has been an upside down, topsy turvy year. Teams that you think should be at the top or in the middle. Some teams that you thought at the bottom are now challenging the top. How exciting! College basketball is usually something people pick up on in the middle of the season. How exciting has it really been to this point?
I think if you haven't watched UCLA play basketball this year, you've done yourself a disservice. If you haven't heard of Lonzo Ball yet, watch this kid. I saw him in April last year at the McDonald's All-American game, and I thought this kid's going to change UCLA for the better, and he has. If you haven't seen how well coached Scott Drew's team is, although I will say they look very unprepared as one of the last two unbeaten teams remaining going into this week. They look very unprepared at West Virginia on Tuesday night. They suffered their first loss. If you don't know about Gonzaga and St. Mary's, watch your TV when you get back from dinner or the bar on Saturday night, flip it on and watch Gonzaga, St. Mary's, because those are two of the best teams that not everybody's talking about. If you haven't watched Villanova, if you haven't watched Creighton, a team that I think has surprised a lot of people this year, and Kentucky's still really good. Duke's struggling a little bit. Go watch the ACC because there are a lot more teams in the mix now. This is a really fun time for college basketball, and maybe parity isn't as good for the sport of college basketball sometimes because college football is so regional. College basketball seems to have more national appeal because of the NCAA tournament. So I understand that it's hard for the casual fan to latch on when Duke or Kentucky or North Carolina isn't at the top or unbeaten or whatever it may be. But take some time, appreciate it over the next couple of weeks as you kind of dive in, toe first into the pool of college basketball and try to appreciate some of the parity that we have, because there's so much of it. The talent level maybe isn't as high individually, but collectively it makes for a better, more competitive product. And I think that's been the best part of it so far.
One final question, I'll let you go because I appreciate your time so much and enjoy. I could talk to you for hours, as you know. And that has to do, your Friday night work this year was outstanding. It was a staple for me to pick it up every week. And I'm on the road, and it's the night that Mac had to go back to Connecticut to go to the studio. What was that like in what turned out to be a dynamic game for you in handling, okay, how do we now negotiate this fourth quarter and then beyond?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a bad scheduling mishap on ESPN's part, and I don't think they would be upset at me saying that. It's mistakes have been made in the past. I'm sure we'll make more in the future. This was one of them. To have Max scheduled for such a late game and to be in studio the next day, there was a directive saying, "Hey, we have to let him go." It was against his will. Trust me, there was nothing that upset Max more this year than having to leave, and not only to leave, but to leave such an incredible game. It ended up being an unreal contest. I mean, BYU-Toledo, over 100 points, made field goal at the horn, and I called the last 10 minutes and 51 seconds of it by myself with, of course, the help of my phenomenal sideline reporter, Molly McGrath, who, you know, caught a key missed flag where there should have been one for illegal touching against Toledo on what was a go-ahead drive late in the game.
Right.
She was phenomenal. Our crew did great. And for me, it was... You know, that was my Scully homage because that was the last he called baseball game. That's what I'm going to claim from here on out. I didn't think about it at the time, but that's what I'm going to claim, that was my Scully homage. Just to help, you know, Steve, you know that your support crew is so important, your statistician, your spotter, and how important they are to a broadcast. Pennsylvania's own Ed Sfida is my statistician. Bill Garrity was my spotter. They were tremendous in making sure I was on top of every possible angle. And at that point, you lean on your training. You know, I've done thousands of games at this point. I've done a lot of them on my own with minor league baseball and being in the booth for nine innings by yourself. Steve, you know what that's like. You call the game. You fill in when you can. You observe what you can. You try to make the sense of it. You try to contextualize it. And then at the end of the day, you just call the damn game, and hopefully that's all you need to do. That's really all we had to do. You just call the game and observe as best as you can, and it didn't turn out all that bad. So it was a unique night. Certainly not my preference to have my partner and one of my best friends leave the booth that night, but I know he didn't want to do it, and I just tried to make the most of it.
Been there before. As I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself, been in the shoes, understood completely. You, and along with Molly, you were brilliant that night, but you always are.
Thanks,
anyway.
My friend.
Adam,
thank you,
thanks
friend.
So much for the time. Appreciate it so much. You're always so generous with us. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, bud.
The outstanding Adam Amin from ESPN. Now that right there is one of the truly, young. There are a lot of young broadcasters I think are pretty good along the way, but that's one that's a young broadcaster that is outstanding. He will get to some mega level in this thing along the way that within the next 5 years, somewhere he will, because he knows how to call a game, and he understands what's important in calling a game. We'll take a break. We'll return with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. All right, the Chargers are going to Los Angeles. The Texans are staying in Houston because they better be, because we got Mark Vandermeer on in the next half hour. We'll talk with him. They've got a playoff game at New England on Saturday night, and Mark's going to be very generous with his time and talk to us about the outstanding Houston defense. Romeo Crennel's defense has been incredible. And it really... and then, of course, then you've got Brock Osweiler. Marcus had to come up with 15 or 16 different ways of saying incomplete without being redundant. And the odd thing is they acquired Osweiler with the idea that he was going to solve the quarterback problem, make them a dynamic Super Bowl contender. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. the voice of the Texans, next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's get right to Houston and bring in the outstanding play-by-play voice of the Houston Texans, the only play-by-play voice the Houston Texans have ever had, and that would be Mark Vandermeer. Old friend, it is good to hear you on the other end again.
Steve, always good to hear you, my friend. And, yeah, I'm the only voice they've ever had here, but I've learned everything from you. Do people know this, that I used to listen to? I used to sit there with a Walkman. That was an old device to listen to the radio. A Walkman listening to you call basketball games at Rec Hall. That's how I learned how to call basketball.
Well, it's awfully kind of you to even say that. I appreciate that. All right, let's get to the Houston defense. Let's start with that. And obviously, Romeo Crennel and what he's done, it's been the cornerstone of what they've done. You've watched Jadeveon Clowney fight through injuries. Now that he's healthy, what kind of force has he become?
He is tremendous. I mean, you have to account for him on every play. You know, J.J. Watt's been out since week three, and even when he was in, he really wasn't healthy. And you miss him a lot because he is an all-world kind of player. But Clowney is not that far off. I mean, he doesn't have all the sacks that Watt would get, but he's got a lot of pressures. He hits the quarterback. He's got a ton of TFLs. The quarterback, believe me, knows exactly where he is on every play. If you're an O-lineman, a tight end, a back, you better know where Clowney is because he's coming, and he makes things happen. And they have other pass rushers as well. This is the number one defense in the league, but they don't get a lot of sacks. They don't get a ton of takeaways, not nearly as many as they want. Yet somehow they're there in the yardage total, and they have a winning team.
And a guy I really liked when he was in Illinois when Penn State played was Whitney Mercilus. You know, he's been one of those steady guys. What kind of season has he had for you?
Well, he had 12 sacks in 2015. He hasn't been able to reach that this year, but I think he's having a real fine season anyway. He had 2 sacks in the playoff win over the Raiders last week, and he's another guy that you really have to account for. I mean, he's more of a typical edge rusher, but they move him around. For instance, they'll put him in the middle of the defense sometimes and put Brian Cushing outside just to sort of shake things up a little bit, give the offense a different look, and that's one of the things that Romeo Crennel, the defensive coordinator, does so well here. He mixes it up. He spins the wheel, as Bill O'Brien says, because they want to create something different, something for the offense to think about. If you come with the same base defense or the same kinds of blitzes every time, well, the good quarterbacks are going to be able to dissect that and tear you apart, really. For this defense to be successful, they have to be able to continue to confuse the quarterback if at all possible. It's going to be tough with Tom Brady, but they try to make things look different on different downs.
Right. Obviously on offense, Tom Savage had his shot at the end, then got hurt. Brock Osweiler re-emerged. How have you evaluated Brock Osweiler this year, and how good was he last weekend?
He was good last weekend. You know, the funny thing about last weekend, Steve, is if he had a great statistical season all throughout the regular season and did exactly what he did last week in the playoff game, you'd say, great, terrific, good. They won the game. He didn't turn it over. Good job. He threw for a touchdown, ran for another. You'd say, you're off and running in the postseason. So it's almost as if the regular season didn't happen in a way. And I think that's how the whole team approached it. It's a brand new season. Let's just take this one game, try to win it, and move on from there. And here they are in week two of the NFL postseason. But for Osweiler this whole year, he's had trouble with accuracy. He's had trouble dealing with pressure. I think there was a lot of pressure in general on him to be the savior here as the franchise quarterback. And I just don't think it went very well for him. Now, it hasn't been a great year for this offensive line overall. They've had numerous injuries they've had to overcome and other things as well that they've dealt with. It hasn't been the greatest of years, and that's why he was benched in the first place. But he's making the most of this opportunity in this second season, and this is where you wanted it to be anyway. You wanted him to perform at a very high level here, and here you are. You just hope it continues Saturday night at New England.
Has it taken some time for him to adjust to Bill O'Brien? Has it taken some time for Bill O'Brien to adjust to Brock Osweiler?
You know, I think adjusting to this system is difficult because it's the system New England runs, and they happen to have the greatest quarterback who ever lived running the system. So here in Houston, O'Brien's run it with eight different starting quarterbacks. Now think about that for a moment. They've had some big wins relative to their success, three winning seasons, but some big wins with guys coming off the bench and guys getting their first start in a long time, like T.J. Yates last year and Brandon Whedon last year, getting wins out of those guys against good teams. I mean, it's really been interesting to watch them work with it. But I think that for Brock in this first year in this system, it's just been difficult for whatever reason. Gary Kubiak's offense in Denver is a lot easier for quarterbacks to get used to, and I think this one's difficult. Brock's certainly smart enough to handle it, but it just hasn't been like an aerial circus here at all, if anything but. I mean, they've been near the bottom of the league in so many important statistical categories. They've got to figure out a way in the offseason to either get Brock going or to go in another direction. I don't know what they're going to do, and I think a lot of it is dependent on what they do Saturday night.
Right, you know, and obviously I know very well about the system. I watched it firsthand with what Bill did here for 2 years with it. And what makes it frustrating, I'm sure, for Houston fans is Hopkins is not just one of the better receivers in the NFL. You can argue he's among the best in the NFL. What's it been like watching him trying to fight his way through it because he is an immense talent?
Yeah, and the good news for the Texans is last game, he had a good outing. The game before, he had a good outing. When Osweiler came off the bench at Tennessee, it was a loss, but he hooked up with Hopkins a lot. So it seems like those two are over their chemistry issues, which were certainly noticeable throughout the campaign. It wasn't a good year stats-wise for Hopkins, and he's the kind of receiver who's got such a big catch radius, you just have to put it in the right hemisphere for him to go get the football. But so often, Osweiler's been throwing behind him or just in the wrong spots, and those two are not on the same page. Now, the good news for Brock is that he has rediscovered the tight end position here in Houston. The tight ends, as a group, had well over 100 catches. They only had 42 all of last year. So they really upped their catch count in that department, but Hopkins' numbers have gone down, and you really don't want to see that because he's such a weapon, like you say. He's certainly one of the best wide receivers in the league. And I think these last two games show that they're coming out of the dark ages, if you will, of their relationship to make some good things happen, and they have to continue to do that this weekend.
What have you seen from Lamar Miller? What's allowed him to excel?
Well, he's the kind of back I thought coming in who would be looking for the edge and turn the corner and that kind of thing, using his speed. And it's been more of like a workhorse-type back performance out of him this year. You look at the yards per carry stats, they're not sexy, especially in the last game. Last game, they were kind of playing clock ball in the second half, just running it no matter what, eight-man front, getting stopped, but they were letting the number one defense in the NFL sort of carry them into the finish. I think Miller's had a real nice year. He's super tough. He and Alfred Blue make a nice 1-2 punch, but Miller is going to be huge in this game. I mean, if they can get some holes for him, he can certainly exploit them. Does not have a whole lot of breakaway runs. I mean, I expected a lot more of that. You're not getting that, but you'll certainly take what you're getting with this workman-like kind of attitude and performance and output.
All right, they played New England once, but it was early in the year. It might as well have been 10 years ago when they played. But on that night, why did the Texans struggle on that particular night at New England?
Well, and this is one of the things about the NFL. I know you get this in college, too, as you know, where you get short weeks of travel. And I'm not making excuses. Oh. They would not make this excuse. But it was a Thursday night game. It was ridiculous. You know, you prepare for 2 days, then you hop on a plane. And New England, for a team in Houston, is an all-day trip to get there because you land in Providence, and then they had to stay in the Boston area, very hard to get a hotel. It was almost a 90-minute ride to the hotel from the airport, which is crazy. I mean, that's like the old days at Penn State, right, when you used the land in Harrisburg or whatever. I don't know if they still do that. But that was tough. And then the day of the game was almost a 90-minute ride to the stadium. So, you know, all those things, and again, not making excuses, but the edge is so slight in the NFL. It's hairline. It's a fine line between success and failure. So they came out. They weren't ready to play. They fumbled a couple of times on kicks. Osweiler wasn't sharp. And the Patriots were ready for them. And all they had to do was run two or three really nice plays with Jacoby Brissett making his first start, and they won the game, and the Texans offensively just could not get going. And the Patriots do have a good defense, by the way. This game, they are fully prepared. They are ready. They know what to expect. They know the routine. You know, clearly, Tom Brady is the best in the world and all of that, but if anybody knows whatever weakness there is, this staff should know based on all the familiarity they have with Crennel and Vrabel and O'Brien and all of that. So we'll see if they can do it. I still think it's a tremendous tall order to get it done, but hey, anything's possible. This is why we love sports. Let's see how it plays out.
And Godsey would know him, obviously, as well. George would know him. Look, when you've watched Brady, now you didn't get to see him this time because of the suspension early on, but when you've watched Brady, what has allowed him to be somebody that you walk out of the booth and say, you know what, I can see why he's one of the best ever?
Well, Steve, I'm glad you brought it up that way, because there's something different when you call a game as opposed to watching it on television. And you see the quarterback in the huddle with his teammates, and you see everything that he's doing out there in the football field. And the first time I really noticed this about Tom Brady was 2012. Texans were there for a Monday nighter, and then they were there in the playoffs in the divisional round. And you just feel this feeling of terror if you're the play-by-play announcer for the opposing team every time he walks up to the line of scrimmage, because he's just looking at the matchup saying, I'm going at you. And he picks whoever he wants to exploit, and he does it. And he does it with tremendous accuracy. You know, he doesn't have the strongest arm in the NFL. He doesn't have the most athletic talent in the NFL. But he's got the brain, the best one that a quarterback has ever had in the NFL, and he knows where to go with the football, and he can get it there accurately. And the way he just picks where he wants to go at the line of scrimmage is really admirable. It's really noticeable when you're in the building watching a game. On TV, too, but really in the building, you see it. And by the end of the night, you sat there and you took a beating.
Remember one night doing a talk show with Bill, and it was his Thursday night show, and somebody brought up about Brady. And they said, well, I mean, you know, about coaching quarterbacks. He said, well, you didn't really have to coach Brady. And then he went on, and Bill really bristled. And that's what I don't think understand, is that the really good ones want to be coached. And Tom Brady gives Bill O'Brien a lot of credit because he wanted to be coached, and Billy's really good at it.
Yeah, and Brady spoke to the media here in Houston this week, and it was 20 minutes of pure gold talking about Bill O'Brien and everything he did for his career. And you're thinking, Brady had already won Super Bowls by the time O'Brien got there, but he feels like he learned a lot from O'Brien. Bill Belichick said he learned a lot from O'Brien. That's pretty high praise right there when maybe the greatest coach of all time says that. And I just thought that was amazing. You're right, though. The great ones love to practice. The great ones love to be coached. They love to get better. They love all the knowledge they can get about the football game that they're about to play or games played in the past. O'Brien always, I'm sure he told you the story once about Brady remembering a play that took place 10 years earlier.
Yes.
When they were thinking about what to run against a certain opponent. He loves to tell that story because it's a great example of Brady's knowledge base and his recall.
Yep, exactly. He told that story a couple different times. Finally, checklist. Give me a checklist Saturday night. What has to happen for the Texans to get to the AFC Championship game?
Well, saying you can't turn the ball over is kind of like saying you have to outscore the opponent, but you know, you can't turn the ball over in this game. The Texans are a field position, grind-it-out kind of team. They like to pin opponents deep with Shane Leckler and play good defense, get the ball back, hopefully get some good field position, maybe punch it in, maybe kick a field goal. It's kind of like hockey, you know, just get it in there and maybe we can get a score, because the offense has been challenged all year. I think in this game they need more than that, though. They need what we call in this part of the country, since we're right next to Louisiana, lanyap. They need something extra. They need a turnover on special teams. They need Brady to somehow cough it up. Maybe Clowney rips himself into the backfield and gets the ball away from the running back, LeGarrette Blunt, or something. They're going to need a couple of cheap possessions in the Patriots' end of the field in order to get it done. And maybe, just maybe, Steve, they'll make history, because if the Texans win this game, it will be obviously the biggest win they've ever had, and maybe the biggest win in the history of professional football in this city. The only time the Oilers went to the AFC Championship game was the late 80s, and people remember they lost to the Steelers twice, and the second time they got there, they beat the Chargers, but without Earl Campbell and a bunch of guys, and they were able to beat Dan Fouts that day. This win might top that, and unfortunately, we don't have championships here, but that's the situation. It would be maybe the biggest win in the history of the city.
You know, when you were here in State College, you didn't use Landy app. You never used that word.
No, I never did, but you pick things up, right? I never had Scrapple until I moved to Pennsylvania.
Man, you've changed. For the good. For the better.
Mm-hmm.
Hey,
okay.
Mark, always a pleasure, my friend. Because of Sirius, we obviously get a chance to hear you a lot, and you sound better than ever. Good luck on Saturday night.
All right, thanks, Steve. I'll always be grateful for your influence on my career, so thank you very much.
The outstanding Mark Vandermeer. He is one of the best in the business, without question. My respect for him is immense. And if you ever get a chance to hear him, you'll find out why. He is really great. Okay, we'll take a break, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have Mark Vandermeer on the show today. Adam Amin on the show today. Sean Farnham from ESPN today. Again, that's the goal every day. We're trying to run people in and out of here that you want to hear about. And tomorrow we're going to talk with Nate Cobbler on Penn State Wrestling from the Center Daily Times. Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner, will be joining us on the show tomorrow. Paul Alexander on the Steelers. And my brother's on the show tomorrow, making picks. He will pick that Texans-New England game. I think I already know which way he's leaning. I already know which way you're leaning. Kansas City and Pittsburgh, after you foul-balled it the first time, I'm sure you're going to change your pick this time.
Fool me once. You know the rest.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Said that every day when the suit was in.
That ice storm for the Midwest portion of the country, that still looks like that could be barreling down on KC on Sunday. Ben always passes well in bad weather.
The problem is not Ben passing it. The problem is people running in it. That's the issue. I mean, can you get your footing to make plays in it? And that includes defensively. I mean, can you get your footing on this to do this? I mean, supposedly, they're talking about a half inch to an inch of ice in Kansas City coming up on Sunday.
No, the word patience always gets kicked around when describing Le'Veon Bell. Calculating, I think, is one you should throw into the mix, too. Just the way he kind of dances and just waits to press to go to find that opening. It's just going to be interesting to see how he's going to be able to do that if the conditions really get bad.
Right. Well, let's just see. Let's just do a quick check-in and see what the weather's actually going to be like in Kansas City. Let's see. Ice storm warning in effect from 9 a.m. Friday. So far, so bad. A bit of ice tomorrow. Let's see. Ice not as cold. An icy mix on Sunday for Casey Moe. Ice storm to pose travel hazards ahead of Chiefs-Steelers game. Okay. That's just the fans getting there. Let's see. We'll shift it over to the big time look here and see what they say here in terms of what the... I mean, because it's going to be... I mean, the field's covered. I mean, that's not an issue about the... I mean, the field's covered. But remember, it's grass. And because it is grass, it poses a little different problem than it does when it comes to ice occurring 13, 14, 15. Total amount, 1 inch of ice. I don't know about you. I don't think that's good. How about that?
Tailgaters will be huddling around the barbecue a little longer.
Let's see, Sunday. It's a noon start there, right?
Yes.
Noon. ice. 1 p.m., ice. 2 p.m., ice. 3 p.m., snow. 4 p.m., snow. Snow's not so bad. So it's going to be a mixture of snow and ice for the game. Because remember, it's a noon start there, so when you're looking at it, so they mean the game will be over at 3 o'clock, 3:30 maybe at the latest there. So it's going to be snowing the last hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, but ice for the first two. 11 a.m., though, there's nothing. And 10 a.m., there's nothing, but nothing but ice 6, 7, 8, 9 in the morning. Now, they probably would uncover the field around 10 or whatever. It'd be uncovered, and then the ice starts up again. So the field actually might be okay, actually, to start the game. So the team that gets the lead on Sunday might be the one, because the field's going to be covered. And they'll uncover that field. If it says here, no precipitation at 10 or 11 a.m. on Sunday. That's what it says right here. All right, well, if that is accurate, then they can uncover the field, and the field actually might be an okay track at that point. But then, obviously, you've got ice at noon, 1 and 2, and snow at 3 and 4. Because the game kicks off at noon there, not at 1 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock here, but noon there. So I'm just trying to make you feel better.
Last week, Steelers field reporter Craig Wolfley, they had equipment issues on the field, and it was so cold, he went up to the booth to finish the game. This could be his second week in a row up in the booth with Billy and Tunch.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah, everybody has their own way of getting out of the ice. The old, I've got an equipment problem. Can I go inside? Slick.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.